I feel like right before we get on, did you ever see the video of Jack Nicholson psyching himself up to
In The Shining,
in The Shining to
when
do
he's like,
the Here's Johnny scene? He's like, oh, come on, come on. That's kind of what I do right before we record. I got to get up to
is that that's what you do?
that.
Yeah, and that poor was it? Is it Shelley Long? Is that her name?
Yeah,
That poor thing.
I know.
You know, he's not known as one take Kubrick either, so they did that for like weeks.
I read, is it Shelley Long? I always get, no, Shelley
Duvall
Winters. Shelley
Winters,
Duvall.
Duvall.
Duvall, okay.
Who's Shelley Long?
Shelley Long played Mrs. Brady in the Brady Bunch movies. She was in Cheers. I think she played, not Diane. Who was she in Cheers? Oh my God. All the Cheers heads out there are like screaming at their radios right now.
Have we started yet?
Diane, yes. Oh, we're rolling. Hey.
Oh,
Hey.
hey. I'll like slowly fade that in our cheers talks. Oh, hey man, cheers.
Cheers.
Clink.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Cheers Talk.
I'm Elliot.
And I'm Jake. No, I've never actually seen a full episode of Cheers.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I'm more of a Frasier guy myself. I can dig on some Frasier.
I same thing with Frasier. I was always too young for both. I remember my mom watching those, but I think I was too young. I think I
Now
need to
that
go back.
you're old as shit, you should check out some Frasier. It's really
Now
fun.
that I'm six now that I just turned, 60 something, I'm ready to go back.
Oh boy. How you been, Jake?
Doing okay.
Wow. We're a little
Really?
rusty, guys. It's hot out. It's like 120 degrees, real feel,
Oh.
here in Texas. I'm wearing a tank top. I'm embarrassed by it. Our brains just get baked all day, and then we sit down to talk tunes and all that, and so we get a little rusty.
I literally got like disoriented walking from the grocery store to my car today. Like
Parking lots, bro.
I was like shaking. I'm like, man, it's really intense. So stay cool out there, please. Stay cool.
A really good way to stay cool is to sip on a Mimo. And we should say, welcome to Sipping Mimos. It's not actually a cheers show. It's a show where Jake and I. Oh, do you want to do it? Oh,
Okay. That's good. No, you're on fire. Go for it.
it's a show where, well, Jake and I, Elliot, we
Oh
have a
wait, I'm
beverage and
Elliot.
we
No,
well,
you're Elliot. Sorry.
I
Okay.
Elliot. You're ruining my flow.
Sorry, sorry, sorry. You're hot. You're hot. Go for it.
All right. Energy. Jake and I give each other a homework assignment of an album from the 90s, usually. Jake likes radio rock. I like electronica. We compare and contrast and have a good old time doing so. How's that?
That was good.
Give your proper spiel. Like you have like a defined thing.
That was good. Let's do like a can we do like a take two?
Yeah, we could do take two.
Okay.
Kubrick over here wants another take.
Yeah, we're gonna do this 60 times.
Yeah, until we get it right.
Welcome back to Sip Mimos, the internet's premier audio podcast wherein my partner Elliot and I discuss 90s rock and electronica albums, sometimes, but not always, while sipping on a delicious mimosa. Elliot, how
Yeah.
have you been?
I've been all right, man. End of discussion. Moving
All
on.
right.
No, I've been well. My kid turned two, and guess who came to the party?
Oh.
Jake did.
I had the great honor of being there. It was wonderful. Seeing you in dad mode is something that I haven't had the pleasure of seeing.
I
And
know. I went way too overdue. Long overdue.
it was beautiful. Daughter is the cutest, sweetest little girl, and it was a total pleasure being there.
Yeah, it was great to have you. The kid's really into Moana. It's like her favorite thing. That and Frozen. And Jake brought the little stuffed pig, like Pua. And she like sleeps with it every night. It's the sweetest thing.
It was funny. I texted Elliot and I said, okay, so What kind of things does your daughter like? I think I asked, like, what is she into? You know?
Yeah. What's her deal? What's this kid's deal?
Elliot was like, Frozen, Moana, and books. And I thought, okay, awesome. So everything I, as a 34-year-old man, am into. I love it.
Yeah. I sent a picture of me and the daughter listening to records, and I'm wearing bunny ears.
That's so cute.
It's pretty cool.
When you play records, is there like what does she do when like you put the record on and it spins? Is there like any like, is there like a wonderment? What happens?
She's very curious and she just starts pushing all the buttons on the amplifier and like twisting knobs and like it's just
She just starts scratching
back again. Yeah.
So the question was, do I have any Disney vinyl? I do. I didn't realize I had this many. I have The Rescuers, one of my top five favorite Disney movies of all time.
Rescuers 1 or 2? Down Under.
1.
Okay.
Even though Rescuers Down Under, one of the mice's name was Jake, and I always thought that was cool.
Oh. That sounded more Liverpool, but all right. He sounded like Paul McCartney. I'm from Australia.
That's it right there. The Fox and the Hound.
Oof.
Do You Want to Build a Snowman? 45.
Wow.
Tron Legacy.
Sure.
A Goofy Movie, Coco, Lion King. It turns out I have a lot of Disney vinyl.
How about that? And you got Moana, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Cool.
That Moana picture disc.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, man.
I know. Yeah, that dude can write.
Yeah.
That dude can write a catchy song.
That Dwayne Johnson, You're Welcome tune is pretty fire.
That Jermaine Clement sings Chardonnay.
Yeah, the Bowie tune. Don't you know? He's like doing his Bowie impression. It's pretty great.
What does he do? He's like, he says something like, oh, that's bioluminescent algae or something like that. I haven't seen Moana in a minute, but
I see it about 3 times a week. But like the I've been staring at the water. That song like oh boy, tearing up a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of tearing up to animated movies.
What's that?
I saw Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, how was it?
Is that the title? Across the Spider-Verse? And then we have Beyond coming in 2 years. Right? Yeah. Because it was Into and now Across. I could have given them notes on these titles, frankly. But
I feel like there's too many rises in superhero movies and pop culture. So you have like a Rise of the Machines, then you have Rise of Skywalker, Evil Dead Rise.
What is it about the rises thing?
I don't know. Maybe it's one of those things where it's a word that it evokes something in the public, like rise. It's a very dramatic word. I don't know.
The fire rises.
Which one's Bane? Oh, Bane.
That's right. Oh, that's Bane. They're expecting one of us in the wreckage, brother. It's not great.
That's pretty good.
Tom Hardy, let's cover up the most beautiful mouth in Hollywood with this crazy crab face mask.
I know. I was just talking about Dark Knight Rises with a friend. I want to go back and rewatch that one.
Oh, boy. That one's...
It's divisive.
I'm psyched for Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer?
Oh, Oppenheimer. Man. That's going to be intense.
Yeah.
But, man, that cast is just...
Sure.
They're saying this is going to be Killian? Cillian?
I believe it's Killian.
Killian?
Oh, but Spider-Verse was great.
That was good. Sorry.
It was good.
Good. We haven't seen it. Last thing we saw, we've been going back and watching all the Twilights. Never seen them. And my wife was like, "Let's watch Twilight." And I said, "Okay." And there's something. I'm happy to finally know and see and know. I don't think I understand, but be able to see what was such a big part of pop culture for such a long time.
I heard the last couple ones get pretty wild.
Oh, man.
Pretty violent and crazy.
There, they'll have like moments of just like straight up, just like a vampire would just like twist another vampire's head off, and you're just like, oh, like
wow,
out of nowhere.
Okay. Did you finish up all the paranormal activity movies?
So the only one I haven't watched.
You jumped ship.
Yeah, I had the last two. As far as scary movies go, I watched Evil Dead Rise, which I previously mentioned.
A neighbor like knocked on my door last night and asked me like if I would watch it with him because he got scared. And I said like, I don't want to watch that. It's kids in trouble. I don't want to see that. Was it terrifying?
No, I mean it wasn't too bad. The newer ones are just kind of like just supplemental to those original Bruce Campbell ones. I mean, those are just so great.
Big fan.
Particularly two and three. Army of Darkness.
Yeah. I remember I caught the half reboot Evil Dead, or like the Evil Dead they call it or whatever, and I was like, oh, this is like taking it too seriously, and I'm just like bummed out now.
Where that first one was like such a genius balance of like comedy and horror, this one's just kind of like, you know, horror, 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 scary, 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 you know, a sort of joke, and then horror, you know, just like nastiness. The makeup looked cool. I mean, I feel like it was a lot of the same stuff as the one from, I guess, 2013. God, you know, 10 years ago now. The remake with Jane Levy, with the yellow contacts with the black pupils. Mm-hmm. It's always like with the scary eyes thing.
Oh yeah, you get a thing about scary eyes.
Yeah,
I remember that.
But it was okay. I feel like honestly, it was a case of I'd seen enough of like the previews and screenshots of it, you know, in the past like 5-6 months leading up to it, that during the movie I was like, oh, okay, like I'm not scared of that anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I can't tell you how many times like I was up on like Instagram late at night and I would scroll up and there'd be like the main monster from Evil Dead, you know, ah! You know? So I was kind of desensitized to it, but I mean,
yeah.
I think I gave it like 1.5 on Letterboxd.
The Flash bombed. I haven't seen it, and now I'm like, oh, really? It's not even like fun.
A friend of mine somehow got preview tickets to see it about 2 weeks before it came out, which is weird. We didn't have to sign like an NDA or anything. I thought we would have to.
You went?
Uh huh.
Bro. So you saw it 2 weeks before it premiered. You didn't even like text me a review or anything.
I was saving it for the show.
Okay. Well, let's hear it then. Thoughts? Yeah. Okay. That seems to be the consensus. They're already like, it'll be streaming in 3 weeks.
Next month.
Like, they're like, sorry guys, we're just gonna put it online. Like, wow. It was so hyped.
It got pushed back like what, 4 years?
Yeah, like a lot.
It was a really, really awesome experience to be able to see a preview screening because I'd never done anything like that before.
Yeah.
And there were some kind of cool things, but like, man, I feel like so much of like the Snyderverse, DC, like the CGI, it looks bad, you know? Like,
I heard it looks pretty weird.
It does. And I mean, it was cool seeing Michael Keaton again.
But it wasn't enough to save the movie.
Yeah.
Damn, what a letdown.
There was a really cool thing at the end that I think might be fun. And we'll have to.
I think it's been spoiled for me. I was like, after like the reviews are coming out, like, oh, it's not that great. I think I know what it is. Is it Clooney? Is that the cool thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. But like, all right.
I loved it.
I heard they begged and begged and pleaded for Christian Bale, and he was like, no, just absolutely.
Really?
Like, wouldn't that be cooler? Like, if Christian Bale showed up at the end? Come on. What are you gonna do? The whole universe is falling apart and rebooting, anyways.
I know. It'll be interesting to see what James Gunn does with it.
They just cast Superman.
Yeah, and Lois Lane. It's
The
actor that plays Miss Maisel. The marvelous Miss Maisel.
Is it? Is that Lois Lane?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Who's the dude? Who is Superman?
He is.
He looks like every other dude on TV right now.
Rachel Brosnahan. Brosnahan.
That's Ms. Maybell?
Yeah. So she's going to be Lois Lane.
I've heard that show's great.
Oh, it's killer.
Cool.
Written by the same folks who do Gilmore Girls, or who did Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
And the actor playing is David Cornsweat.
Corn sweat. That can't be right.
Corn sweat. Cornsweet. Corn sweet.
Someone just sent me the announcement.
Oh, he was in Pearl.
Pearl.
Have you seen those Pearl movies? The
Oh no, I know what you're talking about. I heard they're pretty cool.
I liked X a little bit
Corn,
more.
Corn sweat. I heard those Pearl movies are cool, but maybe a little too scary for me. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it'll be cool. James Gunn seems like he knows what he's doing, and will fight for his vision. And I think that's important for superhero movies when you have big studios pushing for an agenda, universe building, that kind of thing.
I trust him. I caught Guardians 3 since it'll be last recorded. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Okay.
Crying a lot. What? Okay, yeah, go on.
Okay, so do you remember, spoiler alert for Guardians 3, do you remember at the end when Groot says, "I love you guys"?
I do. I remember that.
Okay. Did you hear the theory about why? Why you can understand it?
Because we can.
Huh?
Because we all know Groot now.
Yes, because we're part of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right. How cool is that?
I love that. That
which if you were to reverse engineer that theory at the end of the first Guardians when he says we are Groot, and we kind of don't understand what he means. That's us, like, lesson number one and learning how to learn Groot. Oh, come on. Yeah, when he's like, "I love you guys." It's great. Oh, and like right before that, Gamora is on that balcony where he's like, "I am Groot." She's like, "Yeah, I'll be in a second." And she like looks at herself, she's like, "Oh, I can understand him." That's amazing. That's some good shit. How about that hallway fight scene?
Oh.
There's like a 6 minute long one shot insanity of the Guardians just like decimating. It's so violent. I don't know how they didn't get an R rating. I think they're just like, Gunn can do whatever he wants. This is his last hurrah. And like, we fucked up. He's going to DC now and he will be our competition moving forward. But like, let him go nuts on this one. I have one note on that fight scene, which is incredible. It's set to No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been cooler if it was just no music whatsoever.
Yeah.
It would have been more impactful, I think. But that's just my note. And I know like the whole needle drop thing is kind of the whole idea behind Guardians. It's a motif. But No Sleep Till Brooklyn is like a party anthem and like they're slaughtering these people. Like there's a different song for that. I don't know.
I think it would have been maybe like something not so like on the nose. Like maybe
What if it was Master of Puppets or something like that? Like that would have been sick. But like, you know, something a little more aggressive. I guess it's a pretty metal Beastie Boys tune, but you know.
Yeah, I really liked it. I was really worried, you know, like I'm that guy who, you know, I don't want to see. Like, I remember freaking out that they were going to kill off Chewbacca in Rise of Skywalker.
There were two ships, bro.
As we say, somehow, Chewbacca
fuck that movie.
You know, but, like, I'm that person that, like, gets, like, you know, emotionally attached to these fictional characters, and I'm just like, I don't want to see them die.
You're supposed to be attached. Yeah, that's the whole idea.
Speaking of, are you excited for this Indiana Jones?
Nope.
What?
Moving on.
All right.
I was thinking back to, like, I saw like the trailer again or whatever, and I was thinking back to that. You remember that time when we were all hanging out, and our friend Anthony has never seen any Indiana Jones movie?
So we did the Drumgoole cut.
We did the Drumgoole cut. Well remembered. We want to tell the listeners what the Drumgoole cut is. How to introduce someone to Indy.
So if I was going to introduce someone to the world of Indiana Jones, you know, well, so if you're familiar with the franchise, it starts off, I forget, 1933, maybe?
Well, the movie came out afterwards. They were hanging on to the footage of the real events for a while.
That's right. Well, okay. It's based in 19... Hold on, that's gonna bother me. Let me see.
Will it? It's the opening of Raiders. It's, you know, give me the idol, I'll give you the whip. It's the sandbag thing when he moves the idol. It's great. The big ball.
Let me see. Okay, 1936. Okay, so
you feel better now?
I feel better now. So the first Indiana Jones, well, I guess it's just Raiders of the Lost Ark, takes place in 1936. The second movie in the franchise, Temple of Doom,
takes place
it's actually a prequel. It takes place in 1935.
Because they didn't want him hooking up with anyone after Marion was so effective.
And then the third one, my personal favorite, the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, takes place. Oh, it's one, that's my favorite, in 1938.
But we open before
in 1912. All that. Yeah, when he's played by River Phoenix.
Jake has a marker board. He's whipped out behind him, and he's drawn a diagram for me. Like I'm
doing the Pepe Sylvia thing from It's Always Sunny. But like how I would do it is I would start off with like the first like 15, 20 minutes of Last Crusade when he's a teenager.
And he gets the hat.
The fedora.
Thank you. I was trying to find that.
And then from there, I would show the entirety of Temple of Doom. Then I would show Raiders.
Yeah.
And then I would do Last Crusade.
And that's the last movie they made. And they didn't do anything else.
That was it. It was a perfect trilogy. Actually, I would probably do the first like 20 minutes of Crystal Skull because I find that very entertaining.
I liked the beginning too. It's not that bad of a movie, really. We've had worse. It's better than Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, that's
true. I'll say that. I don't know. People shit on that movie too much, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was, you know, I think maybe like as a society, we were getting maybe burned out on Shia LaBeouf, maybe.
It was LaBeouf fatigue.
Yeah, it was a lot of Shia.
And it was so many years later that a new generation was being introduced to this character, and they're like, why is this old man swinging on ropes? I don't get it. And so it just didn't read. So I've heard mixed reviews of this new one coming out. I'm not terribly excited to see it. So
see, I love Harrison Ford. I think he's maybe top five actors for me. As I've gotten older, I think I've started to like really appreciate Harrison Ford as a personality, as an actor. I'm excited. I'm optimistic. He's fighting Nazis again, which is what you want to see Indiana Jones do. You know what I'm saying?
Is that right? Uh-huh. Is he though? Is this confirmed?
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen, I think, is...
Oh, Mads is dope. He's a good actor.
The main baddie. He plays a great bad guy.
I'll catch it eventually.
So, 1945. That's when...
Does that timeline add up? That doesn't sound right, because it's been way longer in his timeline, right? When did... What year was Crystal Skull taking place in?
That's in the 50s, because they're doing the Cold War, and Russia's the bad guy.
And the nukes and all that.
Yeah.
They nuke the fridge, famously.
Yes.
It would have to be after that, then.
So before.
It would be. Is it set before Crystal Skull?
Yeah, so Crystal Skull is set in 1957.
Okay.
So unless it's like some like, you know, secret like sect of like, you know, Nazis hiding and trying to like start it back up again, or it's sometime between Last Crusade and Crystal Skull.
Man, why'd they have to go and make things so complicated?
Are you ready?
If you want.
Let's do it.
Okay.
That was
pretty good, right?
That was good.
It was sitting right there. I know you loved the transitions yourself, but
that's so funny. I was gonna do something with complicated or let go. But that just was perfect.
I think let go of your fandom a bit. Yeah. This isn't going to be good.
Let go of my own mythology.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's dive in.
All right. Here we go.
Here we go.
Girl, can I make it any more obvious?
Yes, sir.
So, in 2002.
Oh, right. We are going to 2002 this episode. We're usually in the 90s, and we're going back to the future like we've done on occasion.
We've got that dial of destiny.
Hey, well done.
cranked up to 2002. An album dropped by a Canadian singer-songwriter by the name of Avril Lavigne. And this album is called Let Go. Elia.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on Avril Lavigne's Let Go?
This one kind of surprised me.
Right?
Because I knew Skater Boy. I remember when this was a big old deal and she was on the scene a lot. And when she was rocking up MTV, I think, my sister might have been into her, certainly took some fashion cues. She was, one of these pop idols. I certainly didn't, go out of my way to listen to the album when it came out. 2002, I was in college. I was, getting into the White Stripes and shit like that. You know, I remember Skater Boy, and I'm like, oh, that's a fun pop tune. And, listen back to that one, I'm like, yeah, this is kind of fun. And then, to my surprise, the rest of the album, it's a lot of ballads and I heard a lot of Alanis on this. The Canada of it all. I heard some Natalie Imbruglia on it, hence the Natalie Imbruglia tank top I'm wearing today. I was really surprised by the high-tech production. This isn't a punk album. There's a lot of bleeps and bloops going on here and a lot of electronic drums, and the production's real sleek and slick even. Tell me about the origins of this lady.
So, okay, so my research kind of stemmed from just, browsing around the internet and watching, I think I've mentioned the Punk Rock NBA, it's a YouTube show put on by one of my favorite YouTubers, named Finn McKenzie. He did a great video on Avril. A lot of my research is from those sources. But to my knowledge, so Avril Lavigne, born in Ontario, she's a child prodigy. Her parents realized early on that this girl can sing. They would have her sing in church. She started an open mic. She actually grew up idolizing Shania Twain. And when she was 12 or 14, she won a radio competition and actually got to sing with Shania Twain. Who is, one of the biggest Canadian slash North American singers of all time,
She's got some jammies.
Yeah. So grew up idolizing Shania Twain. She wants to be the star, She wants to be a famous singer. She gets discovered at a bookstore playing country songs and signs with Arista Records with L.A. Reid. He's a very influential, very powerful record exec. And they want.
I heard she played for 15 minutes in front of the execs, and they gave her the deal. And she was 16, and they just on site signed her.
Absolutely, it's $1.25 million.
gave her a $900,000 signing bonus.
At 16, what were you doing at 16? I was watching The Simpsons in my underwear.
I was digging up anime VHSs and jerking off a lot. $900,000 would have ruined my life.
And what's really fascinating, and it really, so they wanted Avril to be this kind of a country singer. They said Faith Hill meets Sheryl Crow.
I heard the Faith Hill thing a lot, yeah.
But while she was in high school in Canada, she was friends with a lot of the skating crowd, which in skating music is, not always, but kind of the activity of choice for punk rockers,
your Cali boys.
Yeah, it's not limited to, but listen to the Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtrack and it's all punk rock, she had this interest in this more rock sound, and kind of put her foot down. From what I understand, the album originally was really overproduced and had a bunch of electronic drums, and she was no, I want to be more rock. And they trusted her, and they let her do what she wanted to do at 16. I can't even.
Pretty wild.
And
yeah, she drops out of high school with $1 million and moves to California, and I guess for 2 years, tried to find producers that got her vision.
Right.
That's the story.
She hooks up with a writing team called The Matrix.
The Matrix.
Which I could have sworn these folks like came up with our electronica, one of our electronica discussions, but I
looked into them. I didn't recognize the names.
Yeah, yeah. Same. I was like, okay.
But they worked with like a bunch of, they went on to work with like a bunch of pop guys and Korn.
Yeah, yeah. A previous episode. I think the first episode. Inaugural.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this album comes out and it's a hit. I remember my earliest memories of Let Go. I was in 7th or 8th grade and I was talking to a friend, a fellow classmate, a girl, and I was like, what do you, I just burned like a Blink-182 CD. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, do you listen to Avril? And and I was like, at the time I probably would have like stuck my nose up at this because he was just like, mm-hmm. what, And I'm like, I don't. And I remember her saying like, her lyrics are so good. She's so good. Mm-hmm. And that memory, gosh, that was 21 years ago now. That memory stuck with me. I wish I could have gotten like someone who listened to this album, like a female who listened to this album back then to get their opinion on it.
Lived in experience.
Experience, yeah, because I can talk all day how much these songs kick ass, because they do. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine it was really big for girls to hear Avril singing this pop punk music, pop rock music, and think, oh, I could do this,
Yeah.
So I think there's a direct line, kind of like from Gwen. We talked about Gwen to Hayley Williams and Paramore, but I mean, Avril's right there. She's very, very influential, for sure.
Yeah, well, I think like I was expecting it to be like angsty pop punk, but it's really more empowering pop and like ballady rock stuff. Like it's not like parents just don't understand life is hard. It's more like I'm badass and you're about to find out why. Like the ending of Skater Boy like shook me. Like. Yeah. Like, I hadn't listened to the lyrics in quite some time. Like, he's just a skater boy. She said, see you later, boy. He wasn't good enough for her. And then, like, the final, like, reprise is, like, he's a skater boy. Now he's with me. Like, and you got tickets to the show. And now watch. Like, he's more than a friend. We're in love. Now eat shit, you dumb bitch. Because he didn't see how cool he was at the time. And, like, that's a cool story. Like, but it's also, like, kind of, like, a revenge-y. But, like, for a 16-year-old to hear that, it's like, fuck yeah, like it is cool, like to be in these like on the outskirts, like punky rebellious groups and all that, and like you like watch what happens, you a little like Britney Spears blonde like cool girls, like we'll see how our lives go, because we're gonna go somewhere cool, because this is where the heart is somehow.
Exactly, yeah. And I was re-listening to lyrics on this round, because thinking back to my friend from eighth grade, and there's a lot of really, I think, really positive messages in this one for any listener, but particularly for girls, like maybe looking to find their own identity, maybe and I think one of the songs with that message is Anything But Ordinary. I was like shook by that one, by the message of this. I think it's like, I'd rather be anything but ordinary, And
yeah,
I think that's just so cool that this album existed, and maybe was that thing that got that introduced girls to pop punk, probably my favorite genre of music, because when you think about pop punk, it is very much a male dominated genre, kind of like, unfortunately, any type of rock and roll. I mean, it's always like guys singing about how girls screwed them over, or my girlfriend cheated on me, or I don't want to grow up, or it's stuff like that. It's always from that male perspective. But you didn't get, you got something different from Let Go, and that's why I think it's a really special, really special piece of art for sure.
Really dug Skater Boy still. I think it's just a fun pop jam.
It's a perfect pop song.
Yeah, I mean, throw that on any old time at the club, people will go nuts. Especially, you know, people in our generations. I always forget how apart we are in age.
I mean, I'm only 28 years older than you, so, you know.
Oh, right, because you're...
I just turned 68, so...
Yeah, when you see the new Indiana Jones trailer, you're like, "And hey, we used to have them. We called them cereals. They played before the movie."
Just like, I wish I had the Dial of Destiny, you know.
Oh, I liked "I'm With You." I had heard this one before, and it's like a cool. I really enjoyed the melodies on it. It was a nice ballad.
The yeah, man.
There's that Alanis kind of thing going on, right?
A lot of yeah in this one. Which,
yeah, why yeah kind of stuff, you know.
Kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah, I heard a bit more like Jewel vocals than Stefani vocals. Like,
oh yeah,
there's always like the like cool like power pop guitars behind everything, but like she's like. She is singing, and she's not. Oh, and there's like the one kind of awkward tune where she raps a little bit. which one was that? It was kind of cute. I liked "Unwanted," but that's when like the production started throwing me off. And like I know she really wanted like this, you know, pop punk thing going on, but it reminded me like with like the little synth like beat boops of it all. It reminded me of like a William Orbit production. Yeah. The guy from Ray of Light. Like, and then like cut into acoustic guitar all of a sudden and way back into like the slammy jammy pop punk stuff. I'm like, and then like, but in between, like on like the little breakdowns and everything, there's like beep boop boop beep boop boop boop. I don't know what the Matrix is doing necessarily, but it sounds a lot like William Orbit.
This thing sounds slick. Like you said earlier, I personally thought the, so Skater Boy, iconic. I'm With You, an amazing ballad, but you start off this three song sequence of bangers with possibly, I don't know if it's her most iconic song, because she's been around, she's over a 20 year career. I think I saw 40 million albums sold.
Platinum seven times.
Her most recent album, Love Sucks, is really good.
when did that come out? I was wondering what she's been up to lately.
2 years ago.
Oh, wow. She's still kicking. Huh.
Oh, yeah. She's probably more relevant than ever. And I think it's because a lot of people are realizing, like, oh, yeah, like, she's the queen. You know, like, when it comes to pop punk, Avril Lavigne. She did so much for the genre. But you start off this three-song sequence with Complicated.
With Complicated.
Yeah. Oh.
You don't like that opening track? Losing Grip.
Oh, no. I love Losing Grip.
You hate it, don't you?
I hated it.
I think it's a pretty cool opener, man. Like, oh, yeah. We're setting... But it's oddly sequenced, because the energy like kind of drops. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah, go on.
I would have probably put Skater Boy second, or maybe even opened with Skater Boy.
I would close the album with Complicated. There's a lot of tracks in here, 13 tracks. That feels ambitious.
Yeah. But Complicated... I remember vividly the music video for it. She's like running around with her band.
In the mall,
they're skateboarding.
I wrote down it as kind of cringy. But like, and it made me wonder, like, wait, was she like a Disney kid or something? I didn't know, like does she have acting back? Was she a child actor or something like that?
No, she was just, you know, singer-songwriter from Canada. But yeah, it's very cringy, very of its time. Those were the music videos, like running around, like being dumb with your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was fun to go back and revisit that. But I sent you a video for supplemental listening/viewing.
Yes, you did.
Get to check it out.
I sure did. Jake sent me a video of Avril and her band covering "Fuel" by Metallica.
Oh.
What was the context for this? Because Metallica was in the audience. They kept cutting to them. They're like, whoa. What is this, like some Metallica party?
It was a MTV Icon that they did. It was 2003. And it was just like, they had a bunch of bands covering Metallica songs for this Icon show. And Korn was on there. Korn did
covering Metallica.
Yeah.
Okay.
One did One by Metallica. Limp Bizkit did Welcome Home Sanitarium. And Avril did Yule, which is a kick-ass song. What'd you think?
I dug it. I dug a lot. Yeah, I dug it.
It's pretty cool, right?
And like they kept on cutting to the band, like, and each one of them are like, oh my god, hell yeah. Like, yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, well done.
I think that probably sold a lot of people on Avril, because, you know, Metallica.
When was that show? Where, like, on the timeline is it?
2003. So a year, you know, maybe a year after Let Go came out. So
yeah,
she's hot. Like, you know, she's
a big old deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Avril, you know, she's going to follow, like, she follows Let Go with Under My Skin, which is another total banger. That one comes out in 2004. She continues to go more and more pop. You probably are familiar with her song Girlfriend. The hey, hey, you, I don't like your girlfriend. No way, no way. I think you need a new one.
Is that her? Okay, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, right on. Yeah, I remember that one.
And so she gets more and more pop. But she dropped, like I said, Love Sucks last year, 2022. That one, Travis Barker was a producer on it. John Feldman, he sang for that band Goldfinger, and he's kind of like a legendary pop punk producer. And so it's a lot more rock influenced.
Cool.
So if you need a little bit more Avril, check out Love Sucks, because it's very good. Total recommend.
All right. Do you have this one on vinyl?
So we went to we went to Target earlier, and I was like, oh man, because they just celebrated the 20th anniversary of this record. That was kind of neat, being able to do this. And the Target did a special pressing, and I was going to get it for the show, but they didn't have it. I was so bummed out, because
vinyl collectors out there, follow Target and Walmart's vinyl selection, because they get exclusives all the time. It's pretty weird.
Man, I have a couple. Metallica did some Walmart exclusives, and like they're like beautiful. They're on beautiful like color vinyl. They sound good. Totally check out those exclusives. They're a lot of fun.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this one. I'll return to the hits, and I will definitely return to I'm With You, because that one really stood out to me. I might have an in on someone with an opinion who happens to be female and was of age when this record came out and meant a great deal to them. And I think if I get it, we'll play it right now.
Okay, so the year is 2004. The girl is me, Lauren. I am 13 years old, I believe. And picture me getting up for school. I'm not a morning person, so I'm very upset and half asleep and not speaking to my mom because I just hated being alive that early in the morning, and now I've got to go to school. I hate going to school. I hate being at school. I was one of those kids that just, school never worked for me. I never fit in. I was miserable. I got bullied all the time. And I was also one of those kids that I was not fortunate enough to have a parent that could drive me to school. So for my entire preteen and teenage life, I had to ride the bus to school, which was just an absolute embarrassment and shame for me, because back then, I don't know how it is for kids now with school, but back then it was like, if you were one of the kids that had to ride the bus, you know, you weren't privileged enough to have a parent that can like drop you off at school. And so I was one of those kids. There were a couple, I grew up in the same neighborhood all throughout middle school, elementary school, and high school. So I rode the bus with pretty much the same kids for like, you know, however many years that was, for over a decade, I rode the bus with the same kids. And never once was I one of the kids on the bus that was laughing and joking and running around and not staying in their seats. You know, every bus had like their own little clique. Like you had these bus cliques. And I was the quintessential kid who would sit in the back of the bus, if I could, and pull out my Walkman, put those big fat headphones on my head, and lean against the window and look out the window and not talk to anyone. And that was my entire persona. And if you went through my CD collection back then, or if anyone ever asked me, you know, what are your favorite CDs, I'd list off three CDs. As the year's 2004, so I'd list off three CDs, three bands, and these were my, like, go-to, pull them out of my back pocket, these are the best, this is what I'm listening to. And that was, that was the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Fever to Tell. That was The Killers, Hot Fuss, and Muse, Absolution. And so I just considered these, like, if you were going to define me as a person, as Lauren, if anyone asked, like, Yeahs, The Killers, Muse. There was one CD in that little black zip around CD case that I had, that I, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was, I don't think it was because I was ashamed of it. I think it was because there was this one CD in there that meant so much to me, defined so much of me, not as an outward person, but as an inward person, the person that no one knew. And there was one CD in there that got so much playtime. The limit does not exist to how much I played this CD. And that was Avril Lavigne's Let Go. And I, you know, when people asked me about my favorite bands, I never said Avril Lavigne. I never talked about this album, because for me, this wasn't one of those albums you put on a list. This album was like me in music, and it was so deeply personal to me that I just didn't talk about it with people. But on those bus rides, 13 years old, so end of middle school, most of the beginning of high school, this CD, I would get on the bus, I'd sit, take my seat in the back, no one would talk to me, I'd take out my Walkman, I'd pop it open if it wasn't already in there, and I'd put this CD, I'd put Avril Lavigne's Let Go in that Walkman. I knew where every scratch on that CD was, I knew which song skipped, I knew everything about that. I knew that CD backwards and forwards, and I'd put it on, and I'd put those headphones on, and I'd press play, and that CD was the soundtrack to not just my life, but that morning bus ride to and from home and school. And even today, as an adult, there are so many times that I flash back all of a sudden in some sort of emotional state to me sitting in that bus, looking out a window, and listening to that CD. What Avril Lavigne wrote and produced, really, and put out there in that record, sang to a very specific generation of young girls, probably boys, but I'm just going to speak from the experience of being a young girl. And it was so specific. The girls she was singing to, it was this, like, I don't want to call it like a lost generation, but it was these lost girls. Like, you know, there's the lost boys. Well, there are these lost girls. And you know how there's the quintessential sad boy? Well, there was the quintessential sad girl. And I was definitely one of them. And I know if I was out there, there was more of me out there. I just didn't know a lot of them when I was younger, when I was a kid. And it's these girls who, you know, we had so much passion in us, and we just never fit in. No matter what we did or who we tried to be or who we knew we were, there was no real fitting in. And school was always torturous for us. These were the girls that hated playing the game. We hated playing the game. We knew the game existed, and we knew nobody was really talking about the game. But, you know, the game that all kids kind of have to play growing up. And it's a shame, but it's true. Like, I mean, there's so many movies from the 80s, the 90s, even today, like, written, portraying this world that teenagers have to grow up in. It's just so cutthroat. And there were these girls, and Avril Lavigne knew these girls. She was one of these girls, and she sang to us. And man, everything, every lyric in the album was like she was speaking everything I was feeling. That there's a lyric in "I'm With You," and when "I'm With You" came on, it was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. I'm gonna cry every time I listen to this. The lyric where she's talking about standing on the bridge and she's alone. That image of I would always picture myself in New York, even though at that time I'd never been to New York, and I'd picture myself there standing on a bridge in Central Park, in at dusk, and it's raining. It's so emo, but it was true. It was how I felt inside. Like, I was just alone. I felt so alone. I felt so misunderstood. I didn't feel like I fit in. And so there were these girls that felt that way. And they were girls who didn't quite fit in, but they wanted to. And that was the thing. And it wasn't that want of wanting people to understand them and be around them and accept them and love them and nurture them. And it wasn't the same desire that, like, that girls or anyone really had, where they wanted to, like, fit in the social class in high school and middle school. It wasn't like we wanted to fit in because we wanted to be popular. If anything, we didn't want to be popular, because these were also the girls who were nerds. These were the girls who were skater chicks. These were the girls who were hanging out with skater boys. These were the girls who, you know, we wore chokers and baggy pants, and we didn't want to be the preps and the jocks. We weren't a prep. We weren't a jock. But we still had the desire that, you know, the preps and the jocks had, where we wanted to fit in, but not because we wanted to be in a clique. These were the girls who wanted a clan. These were girls who wanted friendships that were built on, like, loyalty and built on passion and built on understanding deeper parts, where everyone kind of just got each other. And these were the girls that wanted to be a part of groups who were a little, maybe you could say, a little anarchist. You know, they were the kids that kind of wanted to go against the flow, didn't really want to fit in, you know, socially. They didn't want to follow the rules, really. But these were lonely girls that she was singing to, who, these were girls who could see through bullshit. And I mean, it's this album meant so much to me. It's almost hard to kind of, like, break it down, because it was just the whole thing was just one big masterpiece for me emotionally. And I'm sure if I felt that way about it, there must be so many other girls out there in the world who were equally as shaped and defined by this album, who this album was the soundtrack of their life. And it was for me for years, this was the soundtrack of my life. And I'd be moving through life. I'd be in certain situations in my life, and I would hear those songs playing from Avril Lavigne playing in the back of my head, and just living the words she was singing, because she knew, man, she knew. She spoke to that generation. There's only one other, maybe a couple, but one other female artist that sticks out to me from that time who I could say did the same thing and was singing to the same girls, and that was Pink, when she did Misunderstood. But you know, Pink was sort of singing to sort of the same girls, but maybe a different subsect of these girls, she was kind of singing to the girls who didn't just have emotional scars. She was kind of singing to the girls that had real scars. She was kind of singing to the girls who've been through some real shit in their lives, you know, probably with their families, came from broken homes. Like, that's really who Pink was singing to. She was kind of singing to the much more rough and tumble girls out there. Avril Lavigne's Let Go was still kind of speaking to girls who'd been through some stuff, but these were more the girls with like emotional scars. These were the girls that didn't have a lot of outward scars. They weren't like big troublemakers. These were kind of the more quiet girls who were a little more riot girls on the inside, right? And that's who I was. I was a riot girl on the inside, but I was a total quiet girl on the outside. I'll say, you know, I'll put that CD in. When Elliot told me that you guys were going to cover this album, you know, I whipped out my phone and went on Spotify. It was so weird that I wasn't popping a CD into a Walkman to listen to this song. You know, it's on my dumb iPhone and I'm plugging it into my car's computer and playing it that way instantaneously. But he told me, you know, when he told me that Sippin' Mimos was gonna do Avril Lavigne and he was asking me, like, you ever listened to that? I was like, have I ever listened to Avril Lavigne? And he told me this. I was just having a terrible day. And so, you know, we're like, well, let's pop it on because we're in the car. And I turn it on my Spotify and those first few notes, man, the dun, 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 those first few notes start playing and it was like a tidal wave hit me. I mean, it was like if my life were a movie, this would be the cut to where, you know, it like fades, not fades, it like zooms in on it from current Lauren, like right onto Lauren, who's 13 back in that bus with her head against the window and it's raining outside and she's got her Walkman on. I mean, it was like I was right back to 13. And re-listening to that album as a 32-year-old with a kid now who has so much bigger problems in her life, like, than you know, feeling alone or being a lonely kid, it still hit so hard, and it almost made my bad day better to hear that, to re-listen to this album and relive it and re-experience it as an adult. That was, as Elliot would say, delicious. It was a delicious experience to re-listen to this album, and just hearing those first couple of notes that I don't know what they're. I guess it's a guitar with an effect added to it, but you know, that just that those that intro, man, just the first couple of notes of that intro brought me right back into it. Avril knew what she wanted. And she fought for it and she did it. And it was what she wanted to do. And it's how she wanted it to sound. And who she was singing to, who she made this music for, who she made this album for, you know, there are very, very, very few, few artists and musicians who can really, truly have the music they wrote for their generation actually define their generation. And it didn't define an entire generation because, again, this album didn't speak to everyone. This album defined a generation of young girls who felt very alone, very misunderstood, but who were just these passionate girls. And they were girls that really wanted people to feel passionately about them. And she, you know, if you guys ever get Avril listening to this podcast, and if you put this on here and she hears this, then
Avril, what I have to say to you is I got it. I got this album. I got this album so deeply that it was more than music for me. It was like my soul. It was like, and it sounds so cheesy to say, but it's so true. And Avril, I'm so proud of you for making this. I want you to know that if I felt this way, then there were so many others that felt this way. So many others that loved what you had to say, that resonated with what you had to say, and who this album meant so much to them. It meant so much to me. And I just, Avril, if you're out there, if you hear this, I want to thank you so much for giving me that album, for giving me the strength to get to school every morning, because there were so many mornings where I just didn't think I could do it, where I just wanted to walk off the bus and walk away from school and just never come back. And every morning that I got to put this album on and listen to it, and my bus ride was almost the entire album, so I could get through it, you know, first song to last, from Losing Grip to oh my gosh, Naked, I think is the last song on there. Thank you. Thank you for singing to the girl I was. Thank you for singing to so many other girls out there who must have been like me and felt the way I felt. And, you know, just I hope you're so proud of what you made, Avril, because we are. And we love this album. I love this album. I wish I could have actually been on the podcast with you guys, Elliot and Jake, so you could ask me specific questions about songs and stuff. I might send Elliot a couple of blips about specific songs, but just in general, yeah, this was the defining album of my pre-teen and teenage years. Might actually be the defining album of my life, really, honestly.
Okay, that was it. Thank you so much. All right.
Awesome.
Seamless.
Well, okay, so we're in 2002 this year.
We are in 2002.
As you said earlier. And, you know, the White Stripes, you talked about them a little while ago. They were number mm-hmm. one on Spin's top 40 albums of the year. So for any band that year, you're going to be you're kind of like in the shadow of the White Stripes. And when I say any band, I mean any artist, even if your name is DJ Shadow.
Here we go.
Why don't you tell me a story?
Please tell me a story too.
You know, I think I'll tell you the story of my life.
You tell me.
All right.
Yo,
so okay.
Yo. Oh.
So I was thinking. So this isn't our first time revisiting electronica artists, because we did Moby.
We've repeated Moby. We've repeated Chemical Bros. We've talked about Daft Punk a couple times, but by happenstance, we did Homework and then we did like a tribute episode when they broke up.
Yeah. But so this is us returning to one of my favorite episodes. The iconic, the elusive DJ.
Ooh, Shadow. Elusive. I like elusive.
Speaking of elusive, did you see Apex Twin is like dropping music? New music?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got like a cool new vinyl thing coming out too. Like, it looks really dope.
Yeah, it looks wild.
He does that. He just drops stuff whenever he feels like it. I think, is it on Warp? I think he's got some deal with Warp Records.
For reference, listen to our episode on Aphex Twin. It's a spooky one.
It's a spooky, spooky, ooky episode.
We talk about him riding a tank.
Yes, he rides in a tank and he's spooky.
The spooky
Aphex Twin. The spooky, ooky. he's a weirdo.
Did we do that one with Rob? That was spooky because we did that one with Rob Zombie, right?
Was it Rob Zombie and Aphex?
That was
because we did Come to Daddy.
Yes. Ooh, that album
and
artwork.
And then made you watch the music video. Oh,
man, that was a spooky episode. That's
sends shivers down my spine.
That was paranormal sipping Mimos.
Para Mimos? I don't know. Okay. Shifting gears. Yes.
Tell me about Private Press from 2002.
Right. So 96 Introducing comes out, and that's the one we talked about previously. It's one of my favorite albums. It's in my top five, probably four, maybe three. I fucking adore it. I think it's fantastic. I think it's next level good. And it's like cool, kind of like postmodern DJ, like sampling production world. You enjoyed it too, right?
I enjoyed it so much so that I found the vinyl, one of my favorite shops in the Austin area.
Breakaway?
Breakaway Records, thank you.
Sponsor us.
Sponsor. Hey, we love vinyl. We love record stores in Austin. And they had it, and I didn't think twice. I snatched it up.
Hell yeah. Is it the anniversary one? It's like slow pressed or whatever it's called?
OG pressing.
OG pressing. Oh, really? Ooh.
Well, I think delicious. It might be like a second. I think it might be a second pressing, but it's. I think it's from like 96, 97.
Yeah, yeah. I have one of those pressings, and I got rained on.
Oh.
Because, I mean, I had like a leak in my apartment. I don't want to talk about it. But I got the new like deluxe edition, which is dope. Anyways, so like years later, like everyone's like waiting for his follow up, right? Because that record like blew minds, and it became a big old deal. Like then that hip hop world, you know, there with your Massive Attacks, even your Bjork's a bit, and all this. So Shadow waits a while to follow it up. He releases like a little EP of his like older stuff because he was pretty hot a couple years later. It's called Preemptive Strike. It's just kind of an EP. And then finally releases his new material, and it's the Private Press. He calls it the Private Press because he finds these old records that are one of a kind. There was a system where people could go into a little booth and like read a letter to someone, and it would cut to vinyl, and they could ship it to someone, and like instead of writing a letter, they would just send a piece of vinyl and they could listen to it. So we have the album bookended by these private press recordings of like, you know, mom's fine, we're doing great, and all this. This album kind of knocked my socks off because I was very excited for New Shadow. It feels to me like it's underrated in hindsight. Like I don't think it got the clout that it is deserved because it's maybe only because it's more of the same. It's Shadow like returning to form. It is him doing his weird, you know, serene like sampling, always with the big beats. But this one has a bit more of like a sense of humor to it, but also like this story that doesn't seem to end well. If you look at the album as a story, he's throwing in like weird like kind of like synth pop Roland hits. Like there's some like he's doing like. You know, there's like some 808s that are crushed on here and stuff like that. He's like doing a little like 80s kind of vibes on here every once in a while. And it kind of tells us a story about, I just wrote down cars and death. There seems to be a motif, mortality to the album. I think, I don't know if he maybe had an incident happen with related to an automobile or something, but it seemed to be on his mind. Shadow, Josh Davis. He's a very quiet man. He keeps to himself. He is a humble man. He's not one of these rock and roll guys. He's not a superstar DJ throwing his hands up in the air and letting, you know, and getting everyone to lose their shit. He's like trying to like emote through this stuff, and he's finding all these cool samples. You know, look back at our other episode about Shadow to like see how he does it exactly. I sent Jake this. A playlist of his live recordings from the album In Tune and On Time, and it's a lot of material from Introducing and Private Press, you know, mixed together along with his other stuff. But I sent it to Jake mostly because of the intro of the show. He just walks out on stage. He's got a big plastic record. He goes, "Hey," he seems kind of uncomfortable being there. He's like, "Hello, London." the crowds are going nuts. He's like, okay, has everyone heard my stuff before? And they're like, he's like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, I just wanted to show you what I'm doing. It's like, oh, I got a couple turntables. He's like, he gives like a tour of his like booth before doing the show. He's like, and then there's an NPC over here. And then like, I got all my records right here. Like, he's telling everyone what he's about to do for transparency's sake. Like, I don't know. He's like, I just want you guys to know. Okay, anyways, here, all right, cool. Yeah. All right, we're gonna get going. And then like, ooh, you know, the music starts slowly and just builds in. Like, he didn't have to do that. He could have just walked up there, put the first record on and like got going. Why did he feel the need to like go out there and introduce himself? It's just curious to me. The album has a sense of humor, mashing on the motorway with the guy that's like just road raging and like, my bad, beep beep. You hear people like swearing and he's like, vroom, driving down. It's got like this weird kind of like surf rock like rhythm behind it, and like these cool keys, a lot of cool keys on this album. But it starts telling these stories, and like a lot of the pieces are in two parts, like Mongrel, and then like meets his maker, and then I'm gonna save one of my favorites for later, but I think it's a fantastic piece. There's some really beautiful stuff going on here. Jake, what'd you think?
So, I really loved introducing. So when you said we're gonna, talking DJ Shadow again, I was really excited to get back into the world of DJ Shadow. I think I may have liked this one even a little more than introducing.
Ooh, bold.
Controversial opinion. I loved the drums on this thing. The drums are the thing that stuck out to me the most. This album is not streaming anywhere.
This is another thing too, which I think might be related to why it's underrated. I think it has a lot to do with the samples he's using. Some of these got complicated and it got pulled from a lot of services. It's not on Spotify, listeners, but some people have theories where, oh, there was a sample that someone found and they're trying to, get money out of them or whatever, or out of the label. Or they're gearing up for a re-release, and that sometimes they take the original down to build up hype for a re-release, a repressing. But I don't know.
So yeah. I stream the majority of my music on Spotify. I do have an Apple Music account, but I rarely listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I didn't think to check there, because I listen to this thing on YouTube. I was gonna say, even through YouTube, with SoundCloud it might not be the best, the drums were so just upfront and just stuck out to me and just sounded so good.
He's really gotten leagues beyond from like finding a cool drum loop that he likes and then just looping it and then finding one that like complements that and laying it on top. He's like staggering stuff and like putting like stuff in between, going double time and like slowing things down, even like slows the tempo down and builds it back up. It's amazing.
It was like quite stunning to hear that. But I just checked on Apple Music.
Uh-oh.
This damn thing is streaming on Apple Music.
Son of a bee. We could have, All right. Well, hey, listeners, find it on Apple.
We're going to re-record this.
What?
No. We had to do that with Richie Houghton, had to the YouTube listen. So it's no problem, because the kind people on YouTube that have this album up there did a really great job of hosting it. But
Richie Houghton's Dexy FX of 909 is not streaming in many places.
Yeah. Well, I will be a son of a gun.
How about that?
No. I really, really like this one. I thought the production sounded crispy. I thought it was just a cool sound record. Like, I heard a lot of, I heard a lot of hybrid in this one.
Interesting.
I even heard
of all like the break beats and stuff and the strings.
The strings.
Yeah.
And the beats, even though they weren't the same, maybe they weren't done on whatever instrument, the Method Crystal, did on Vegas, I actually heard a lot of Vegas by Crystal Method in the drums. There were recordings of like analog drums.
Yes.
Crystal Method doesn't use those. Not that I remember.
No.
But I heard a lot of like, you know, like, which I was like, that kind of reminds me of Vegas, where we're introducing maybe it's a little bit more like introspective.
Mm-hmm.
This I felt like this was a little bit more like a little bit more welcoming.
I think it was an easier listen.
I would say.
How so?
I don't know where I could totally be. And maybe it's because in my research with introducing, you know, I found like it had broken down like all the tracks that went into each song.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I may have like, you know, when listening to introducing, I'm trying to figure out, okay, what's from what? You know, I remember we talked about there's a Metallica sample on that song, you know, like
that's right.
This, I didn't have that experience. I couldn't find anything about what went into it. But it seemed like a simpler production while listening.
I think on this one, and I might be totally wrong, I think there's less samples and more shadow behind it. Like,
yes.
I think a lot of these like digital drums, the Roland's are played by him or programmed by him. I think there's a little more him in it. And spoiler alert for later albums, he goes full production. He loses the sample thing. I think maybe because this one was released to like B+ reviews, you know, it wasn't like The Flash where it bombed or anything, but people were very happy to see Shadow back.
Was it just like a sophomore slump thing that isn't really a slump?
I think he tried so hard to avoid a sophomore slump and he was nervous about this one. He seems like a pretty anxious dude. And I think this album is about anxiety. I think the album is about his anxiety about the album. I think it's the last Jedi of his albums. part two, how about that? He goes a very different direction from here on out. And
is it like diminishing returns?
I don't want to say that. I don't want to say it's diminishing, but it's not this.
Okay.
It's just a different like genre entirely.
Do you think he stopped maybe like the sample thing? Maybe because it was too. Maybe he. Do you think it was because it took so long, or he had, you know, conquered the genre and wanted to move on to something else?
I think he. I think he's like, well, I've done two of these albums that are built out of other records. I should probably start making my own. Like, and he wanted to like, what can I do, like from zero. And like build something up just from my production know-how. So he like, and he got like really into like, I think what they called hyphy, like it's like a hip hop subgenre, and started making these pretty wild, like hip hop tracks, and getting guest vocalists to like throw bars on top of it. And that's great. Good for him. It's not what the Shadow fans wanted. It's not like we want the moody, we want the weird, we want the like down tempo and like what does it all mean of it all. We want weird record samples. We want him to dig, keep digging Shadow. And he's like, I'm done digging. I'm making new stuff to add to this pile. So he just went a different direction, and good for him. It's fine. I'm, you know, never gonna tell anyone what to do. But I do miss this era of Shadow.
Yeah. It's so innovative. It's, I mean, the only thing I can compare it to that we've listened to is the Avalanches.
You absolutely. Know? Yeah, absolutely.
I put those two groups. Oh, DJ Shadow and the guys in the Avalanches.
Mm-hmm.
In the same category. Just incredible engineers.
And kind of like collage artists, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
My favorite song on Private Press.
Oh, please.
Was Right Thing, GDMFSOB.
Yes.
I
the right thing. The right thing.
I love that.
Did you happen to listen to the Z-Trip remix I sent you?
A little bit, yeah. So I listened to the one that you sent. Let me see.
I find it especially hard to find the right record for the mood. There's nothing worse than picking the wrong thing.
The one I listened to more was the In Tune and On Time Blood on the Motorway. Did you say there was Tom York vocals in there?
Oh, well, can we wait on that? Let's talk about okay. Right thing first, because I've got thoughts on that one.
Okay.
But right thing is great, and that's where you hear like that's him programming beats. That's not a sample. That's him on a Roland. That's one of him on an 808 or 303 or whatever. So I'm sure he's done a bit of that before, but he's programming. Yeah. Instead of like sampling, and so that's a leap. And there's a bunch of samples in there, and then we hear like the bum 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 bum. Like he's doing like a little like, you know, some synthy stuff, and there's a bunch of cool samples in there, enough to make your head spin. Did you catch the Information Society sample?
No.
Do you know Information Society?
No, I'm not familiar.
They were probably a couple hit wonder. I wanna know what you're thinking. Is there something on your mind?
Oh yeah, yeah.
That song's called Pure Energy. And there's a right thing, there's like bum bum ba dum bum ba dum, and then a drum roll. Pure energy. Like, so just one little sliver, like that's from Information Society. Yeah, there's a lot of 80s in here going on. No. What do you think of Mashing on the Motorway, the car one, the driver rage one?
Like you said, that surf rock beat.
Yeah.
It's like something you would hear in like a Tarantino movie.
Yeah, absolutely, Tarantino movie, kind of. But that song ends with a car crash, and then we move right into Blood on the Motorway, which just opens with this piano, like, oh, and they go, you hear the sample, and now eternity. And we just go in death. Yes, we are now dead. Our character is dead. Our protagonist is dead as we listen to this adventure.
And it's like a haunting organ, like a church organ kind of deal.
Yeah, I think it's astonishing. It's 9 minutes and 12 seconds long. I think it's unreal. At a certain point, it starts over and drops in new elements with this guy singing over it. I have not betrayed my ideals. This beautiful vocalist, like, I don't know where he dug up that. Probably stole it, and that's why it's not on Spotify. But I think it is the undisputed masterpiece on this album. I think it might be just as good or if better than anything on Introducing. I think it's astonishing. It's got these gorgeous strings. And then these sweet, sweet double time drums, like bah, 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 drop in, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's breathtaking.
And you almost get like those like little like, I'm listening to it in real time for reference. and you get like almost bells, like tingling.
They're little church bells, like, you know, when you the handheld little ting tong tong bing bong. Yeah.
Boom.
There's a lot of melody on this one. It's yes. Really astonishing. It's really beautiful. Yeah. And I sent Jake a piece from the live In Tune and On Time album where he plays a lot of this together. And his rendition of Blood on the Motorway live drops this amazing Tom York croon, like scream almost.
What song is that from? I'm not familiar with a ton of Radiohead.
Tom York recorded it for Shadow.
Really?
They're buds, man.
That's pretty cool.
I think in between, before this, when did Uncle come out? UNKLE. Uncle is Shadow and James Lavelle. I think 60/40, James and Josh. And featured Tom York on a few tracks. Rabbit in Your Headlights, if you remember that one.
No.
I'm a rabbit in your headlights. Tom York of Radiohead, listeners, is a big old fan of Shadow, and they collabed on a few things. And he just, I think Shadow must have been, hey, I'm going on tour, can you do you have any ideas of what you could do over this one? And it just goes, and that's kind of it. And it is like gut wrenching. Like
it's haunting. Yeah.
Haunting. And then Shadow stutters. It goes, it's amazing. It's gorgeous. And like, if you're not, if you don't have goosebumps, I don't know what to tell you. It's a beautiful recording. I'll drop it in underneath this. But man, I'm a big Tom York fan. I think his vocals are crazy. Oh, and then Right Thing Z-Trip remix that I mentioned before is like a very cool remix of Right Thing, one of your favorite tunes. And it's kind of a medley of all Z-Trip's favorite Shadow tunes. So just kind of, it's kind of like a real big high five, love you bro, kind of like travel of all Shadow's best tunes through the beat of Right Thing. And then just like it breaks down and slows down. Like, it's just gorgeous. It's a really well put together remix. Yeah. And I think this one is just one for the ages, man. Hard Absolutely. To find, apparently. If you see this one on vinyl, grab it.
I love the artwork for it.
I was gonna mention the artwork. So curious.
I love it.
Introducing is just like a photo of him, a photo of like just people looking at a record store, and then like the innards are like very green, you know. And this one's like this cool like printmaking kind of like. White, black, white, and orange going on.
It's very much a collage. You have, but everything is based around a circle. There's a hand, and it looks like he's holding almost like a ball, and there's a skeleton, like there's a bird, and then there's several hands making another circle. I would, you know, really, really love to see, you know, what was behind the development of this artwork, because it's not what I was expecting. Because like Elliot said, introducing is just, it's him. Isn't he wearing a wig on that front cover? Or am I thinking?
What are you talking about?
On the front cover of Introducing?
No. Who it's just a photo. Of?
Someone's wearing. Hold on.
Wait, but
yeah, isn't he wearing a wig?
Neither of those guys are Shadow.
What?
Shadow's not on the cover of Introducing, man.
What?
that's just two dudes shopping for records, man. Wait. What? Why would you think?
I could have sworn.
He's never been on an album cover.
I will be goddamn. I could have sworn that was him in a wig.
Why would you think that? You could have sworn that?
I was like so confident. Like I was going to bring that up. So, like I like in my notes from today, I'm like, be sure to bring up that he's wearing. Okay. But who do we talk about that they're wearing a wig on the front?
I don't know. But it's okay.
The front cover has Shadow's friends, Tom Shimura, in a white wig. Ah, that's who it is wearing a wig.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Tom Shimura, who is also, they refer to him on this website, medium.com, as a hip-hop Jedi, Tom Shimura, in a white wig and sweater, and Xavier Mosley, Chief Excel.
That's the guy on the left?
Yeah.
All right. Ah,
okay, I could have sworn that was him. All right.
Well, I guess we're both kind of right. It's not that. Josh, and someone is wearing a wig. I didn't know there was a wig involved.
I knew there was a wig involved.
All right. I'm wearing a wig right now. Is it all right?
That is good.
Can you do that?
That's pretty good. Well, I can't because I actually probably need a wig.
No, you look great. You look great.
Thanks.
I need a haircut so bad. I feel like I just got a haircut and it's already like, it doesn't help that it's 130 degrees outside.
I do. I have to wear. I'm pretty thin on top, so I have to wear a cap these days everywhere. Because, dude, if I'm outside without a cap on,
get that suntan lotion. Suntan lotion.
Yeah, I'm gonna use that instead of hair gel. It's bad.
Get a cool hat. Be a hat guy.
Yeah, I have I bought a Spider-Man cap from Disney World.
Okay.
So I've been rocking the Spider-Man cap. I turned 35 this year. Another thing I really, besides the drums, on this one, I really noticed the guitar. You know, I'm a guitar guy, and so whenever there's a guitar present, I'm just like, I zero in on it. And there's a lot of really like kind of like eerie sounding guitars, like on like Mongrel, and then Beats His Maker. It kind of like it starts off with this like weird like I think it might be not arpeggiated, but these like plucked notes that are kind of like eerie sounding. I really like that. I loved Fixed Income. Giving Up the Ghost, Walkie Talkie.
So all of them?
Yeah, pretty much all of them. No, this was great. This is one I'm probably going to listen to on my drive to work tomorrow morning.
Excellent.
Because it's like it's soaring at times and
yes.
calming and
yeah, it's beautiful.
When you're in traffic, you need that kind of thing. And this is one I'm certainly going to return to. And if I see the vinyl, I'm snatching it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you like 6 Days? It's the at the starting of the week.
Oh yeah, that was a weird one.
It is weird.
Yeah,
like almost like Hawaiian, like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So. There's a lot of humor to this one, for sure.
Yeah.
But no, I thought it was great.
There's a world where like I think a critic could see this as disjointed, but I see the language underneath it, and like it feels like a piece to me. But maybe I don't know. I think it's underrated. I think it's incredible.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, you invent a genre, essentially, you know, with that first album. So, I mean, it's kind of like you're almost not doomed because there are still people out there that, you know, value this work and think very highly of it and love it. But doomed by your own success, you know, you're just like,
I think that's exactly what it is. I think he was terrified of the slump of which we've mentioned before and all this. That's why like, Mongrel, which opens up side A, like it opens up with Welcome to Fear side 2. So is this album about his fear of the album itself coming out? Like I can only, you know, guess.
It's funny. A lot of times I have to be just like, you know, have it like banging me over the head being like, this is what this means. But after this conversation, I'm thinking about, I can't remember the song, which song particularly says like his record collection is growing day by day, or
this record collection gets tied up every minute.
Yes. Yes.
That's Right Thing.
Huh?
Is it not Right Thing?
Okay. Right Thing. Is it Right Thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're talking about this. I picture a producer who's buying up these records, buying up a ton of records, trying to create something to live up to his first album. Like,
yeah,
his record collection. Hold on, it's gonna kill me. Hold on, I'm gonna see what it says. Pull up on Apple Music now. Let's see. This tight collection.
This tight collection gets bigger than that.
Oh, this tight collection. So I took that as his record collection. I could totally be wrong. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I find it very difficult to find the record for the mood. And there's nothing wrong with making the wrong decision.
So that's him.
Yeah.
That's him in his own head being like, oh, I need to create something.
Yeah. Well, it's his anxiety about like, what if this record doesn't work? What if it's not as good as Introducing? What if people hate me? Like, I think this is a lot of his anxiety, shyness, and like, I don't need to do this anymore, man. Like, can I just have like a radio show and just do that and play like deep ass cuts of in 45s like all day? Like, I'd be happy. I don't think he would have been happy there, but he keeps going, and it's, you know, it's just different.
Yeah, I love this one. Do you have any final thoughts on Private Press?
Final thoughts: if you liked Introducing, this is just as good. So. I think it's astonishing, and like again, like Blood on the Motorway is unbelievable. If you want more Shadow, there's more of it. Again, I recommend the live album. What is it? Whatever. There's lots of cool stuff out there by Shadow. And if you want to like deep dive, then yeah, dive into the future albums. It gets weird and wacky, and he tries new things, and good for him. And dig on it. I think the mid 90s to early aughts shadow releases, meaning this Predator Strike and Introducing, are just astonishing, and he he's cemented himself on the Mount DJ Moore in my head. And I can't think of any like more influential and like profoundly moving like sampling artists, you know, than Shadow. Like, he's leagues beyond Fatboy Slim for me as a sample artist, you know, sample artist. He's an amazing turntablist. Like,
yeah, he's scratching on this one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's an amazing scratcher, yeah. If you're like this and you're into the more of the funky stuff that's on here, like, you know, Walkie Talkie and all that, check out him, his work with Cut Chemist. We'll get to Cut Chemist. Him and Cut Chemist, I think I mentioned it on the Shadow episode, on the Introducing episode. He and Cut Chemist like have this DJ mix called Product Placement, which is fucking fantastic. It's them and like all 45s, and they're all 45s from like commercials from like the 60s and stuff. And they're just like mixing the shit out of these like 45s, which is insanely hard if you know how DJing works, analog DJing works. But it's fantastic. Good luck finding that on Spotify. He's just like on another level, man. And he like really knows his stuff. He's just a connoisseur and a real student of these weird, student of the weird. He's a student of the weird. He wants to make weird stuff. And I think he succeeds, and it's deeply moving and incredibly powerful. And I'm a big Humongo fan.
Well said. I second that. I Mimo second to here.
Mimo second. All right.
Many people don't realize what an enormous impact their physical surroundings have on their mental well-being. Being surrounded by a home that feels like you and brings beauty and inspiration into your life gives you a feeling of calm and appreciation of the beauty in the world. You fill your home up with furnishings and items one way or another. Why not make them wonderful and a reflection of yourself? Joyce at Joyce Marie Interiors is committed to bringing beauty and elegance into the world one room at a time. Let her help you transform yours. Because if you could do it yourself, you would. Visit joycemarieinteriors.com for more information and tell her Jake and Elliot sent you.
Well, all right. Well, I think we did a good job of tackling two absolute giants of their genre. If you haven't listened to DJ Shadow's Private Press or Avril Lavigne's Let Go, both from 2002, which, side note, 2002, absolutely the best year for New Year's Eve glasses. Go out.
That's right.
And go out and listen wherever you listen to music. Private Press is on Apple Music, as I discovered live on this episode. If you have any experience with either of these records, shoot us an email, drop us a line on Instagram. Elliot's, you know, really active over there on our Instagram. That's Sip and Mimos Pod at Instagram. Oh wait, no, at Sip and Mimos Pod. our Gmail is sipandmimos@gmail.com. But yeah,
no, sipandmimospod@gmail.com.
Sipandmimospod@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But yeah, so for next time, I was just checking the calendar, and I think it's going to be opposite day on Sip and Mimos.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, for 3 years now, I've been dishing out some pretty tasty radio rock, pop punk, R&B albums for you. And, you know, I listened to some electronic albums in the 90s back in my day. And
you did not.
I would like to bring one to the table for discussion, if that's okay.
Is this a Ray of Light situation? Because if it is, I'm going to be very upset.
Oh, that's a controversial episode.
Go back to episode Ray of Light. Stan, Smiling Stanley in the corner.
Excelsior.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Yeah, so for the next episode, I think we're going to talk a little Jake Drumgoole Electronica.
We're going to do a little switcheroo?
We're going to do a little switcheroo.
Can I do Radio Rock then?
You can do Radio Rock.
Can I please?
You can do it.
Okay, thank you, Jaggy.
I hand you the mantle.
Thanks, Daddy.
All right, so my album next time.
What's your electronica from the 90s album going to be?
All right, so in 1999.
This better be good.
A song came out on the radio. I'm sorry. This song came out in 1998. Came out on the radio that captured my 10-year-old imagination for much of my childhood. And it's kind of constantly been in the back of my mind since then. So we're looking at 25 years now. It's a song I have returned to a lot, and an album that I recently returned to, and I thought, you know what, I gotta get Elliot to listen to this, just to get his two cents, to see what he thinks about this.
So
next time, switching Mimos.
Oh, I love that, switching Mimos. That's great.
Thanks, bro. We're just
swapping germs.
Yeah.
We're all going to get COVID-23.
We are going to be talking about 1999's Europop by the Italian electronic group Eiffel 65. And if you're not familiar with Eiffel 65, the song, the aforementioned song that captured my imagination was Blue Dabba D, Dabba D. I cannot wait.
That'll be a good discussion. I remember when that album came out. I bought the CD.
Really?
Yeah.
I had the CD too.
One to look out for that I actually enjoy is called Living in a Bubble.
Oh, I love Living in a Bubble.
Oh, it's got your vocoder stuff. You're gonna lose your shit.
Oh yeah. Oh,
I have and I have thoughts on where this nonsense goes. It's just rough. Okay, 1999, trying to take this stuff seriously and like getting out there to try to DJ, and then people are like, "Oh, so you like FL65?" I'm like, "Oh, god damn it!" it's not gonna be another Ray of Light episode. I'll be cool about it. I've got a couple options here for mine. If I'm gonna go rock with it, fuck it. In August of 1997, a band that I think we've talked about before, and I think you're a pretty big fan of, and they're pretty weird and pretty wild, and they're just so like deeply, deeply, deeply German. They put out an album called Sehnsucht, and they're called Rammstein.
Are we going there?
Yeah, we're going there.
Going to the Stein?
We're going to the Stein. So let's do Iowa 65 versus Rammstein.
Man, this
Sehnsucht. Sehnsucht.
This is a match made in heaven.
I like love Sehnsucht. I think it's fucking awesome. There's like you'd be hard pressed to find a song that we can't at least make a joke about. It's weird, and boy, these guys are weird and like really crazy. And like when we started the show, they were about to come to town, right? And then they got delayed. Remember that?
Yeah.
Have you seen them?
I've never seen them. Just on Family Values 1998 tour VHS.
VHS. Wow. All right. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, of course, there's Du Hast. If you can find the. I don't remember Stripped being on the original release, but Stripped is a cover, is it not? It's a Depeche Mode cover. If you can find the Depeche Mode cover Stripped by Rammstein, I think it's wild.
This is one, we've kind of like been circling this one for a while.
We have been circling this one.
I think it's going to be a really special episode to find.
Oh, I'm looking at the track list. I can't wait to revisit this. Oh my God.
If you listen beforehand, fair warning, the album artwork is fairly morbid.
it's no worse than an Aphex Twin cover.
This is one of those, no, mom, it's cool. Like, it's, they're not that, it's not scary. I mean,
it's scary. What is this? This is some dark, dark shit. But oh, it's so much fun. And like the musicality is amazing and the production's dope. Spillment Mirror is like one of the dopest. Okay, never mind. We'll get into it next time. But oh my goodness gracious.
Very industrial friendly. Well, I feel like they're industrial, right?
Yeah, you can call them that. That's fine.
Very industrial friendly rock album. I cannot wait. And it's going to pair really well with the Eiffel 65 guys.
Industrial metal, Google calls them. So we'll see. All right, I love that. Oh, I can't. Oh, I'm actually deeply excited for that one. That'll be great.
Awesome, man. Well,
all right, I'm very excited for that one.
I cannot wait. Elliot, it's been a blast talking, revisiting DJ Shadow and Avril with you. Thanks for introducing me to Private Press.
Hey, oh, I love that. I'm glad we sorted out all the complications. And you know what? I'm with you.
Yeah, so. I'm just going to go back to being a skater boy. So see you later, right. Boy.
Oh, I will see you later, boy.
And with that, I mentioned it earlier, give us a follow on Sip and Mimos Pod on Instagram. And then if you tell us about your experiences with DJ Shadow or Avril Lavigne or Pop Punk or sampling, shoot us an email, sipandmimospod@gmail.com.
If you got a friend that we're covering one of their favorite bands or artists, send a link to them. Just tell your friends. That would help us out a lot.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right. Well,
but above all, we should tell the listeners too.
Hey,
please
stay sipping.
Stay sipping.